Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
Men are idiots, and idiots do stupid things.
Howard Simon.
Oh, what a loser!
Jeremy White.
He's an idiot. Don't listen to this. He's an idiot.
On WGR.
I really didn't think you could lower the bar at your station.
Sports Radio 550.
Well, there's some hockey to talk about from last night.
I wish I stayed up for Vegas San Jose. I did not.
No, you don't.
No?
I stayed up for the first period, and I regret it.
Oh, really?
I'm tired.
I wanted to see what happened. Sure. Yeah. I mean, I get that.
That's what I'm saying. You don't wish you stayed up because you'd be double five-hour energy today.
Extra strength. Well, I know Thursday is going to be a late night, so I'll be tired Friday. So I was trying to, stock up on the old good nights of sleep before we get to draft night.
You got a game 7 tonight, too?
7:30 start, I think. A little later. I think it's a 7:30. I'm already DVRing the replay of Vegas-San Jose on NHL Network. Mm. I do need to go back and watch it just to see what the guys were saying at the time. And really, I just want to watch the third period in overtime to see the call and the power play and the four goals. I watched the first two periods of Toronto-Boston. I went to bed before the third. I figured no matter what happened in the third period, I wasn't going to enjoy it. Either the Leafs were going to come back and win, and I would have been miserable, or Boston would have won, and I really didn't need to see Bruins fans celebrating. So I'm glad Toronto lost. This is how I'm phrasing this. I'm not glad Boston won. Who roots for Boston? I'm glad Toronto lost. I can move on from my life to the next round of the playoffs, go Columbus. But let's face it, the big story in the NHL today is going to be this discussion over the call last night in the San Jose game. And I'm telling you, Jeremy, I woke up, I watched the highlights on NHL Network. The very first thing I thought about, they set it up before the clip. So they talked about, what'd you think of the penalty, major, four power play goals. So I knew something had happened. And then they played the clip. And I saw, obviously, he didn't cross-check him in the face. And the first thing I thought of is, we're going to have a discussion on replay and coaches challenge in the NHL. In fact, Jonathan Marchessault, after the game, cites the Rams-Saints game, the NFC Championship game. And I'm cursing instant replay because I feel like someone's going to bring up, hey, is there a way to correct a call by the officials if it's wrong?
Yeah. I was just tweeting out a thought on this. Does this sentence make sense to you?
Go ahead.
It's early. We live in a time in sports replay where we not only hate how it ruins mm-hmm. huge moments,
yep.
but we can be aware that the absence of replay in a big moment means that it likely gets added to be even more expansive. I hate that today we know.
That discussion's coming.
Now they're going to start reviewing that stuff.
Yep. I don't know if they will adopt it, but the very first thought was,
here comes
this is coming up for discussion.
Yeah, here comes more replay.
And we're going to talk about whether, in overtime, in the playoffs, in the last 5 minutes of the third period, only on a major call. I mean, again, we can go down a serious rabbit hole with this, but someone will bring up what happened to the Vegas Knights last night, and someone will cite the Rams-Saints game, and there will be a discussion in the NHL about whether we should add some kind of a review and or coach's challenge for incorrect calls.
Penalties, or are we doing just majors?
That's what I'm saying.
Okay. It was a major last night called on Logan Couture for a cross check.
Eakin.
Cody Eakin. So he gets a cross-checking call. It is a terrible call.
Right. They must have. Now, here, let me run this by you, okay? I figure, I'm watching it and think, they must have thought he cross-checked him in the face.
Right.
Nazem Kadri in the Boston series, who ends up getting thrown out and suspended. There's a pool reporter who talks to one of the officials, the officiating supervisor. Let me read you the quote, okay? They asked, why was a major penalty called? Quote, the referees called a cross-checking penalty for an infraction that caused a significant injury. In their judgment, the infraction and its result merited a major penalty. They didn't say we thought he cross-checked him in the face. They're saying the cross-check resulted in the
injury,
which kind of, but not exactly. He was thrown down by Stastny after he was cross-checked.
This is punch a guy at a bar, he falls back and hits his head and dies.
Right.
and you get murder.
Manslaughter or whatever the charge is.
You didn't mean to kill a guy. You meant to punch a guy in the face. And
See, Gerard Gallant, after the game, the Vegas coach says, the referee told him he cross-checked him in the face. Clearly, that was not the case.
So they missed
it. But the pool report never says anything about that. The pool report says the penalty is a result of what happened to Joe Pavelski on the play. So, once again, the NHL is screwed up in many different ways. Well, but whatever, they missed the call, and I feel like someone's going to bring up replay.
If the Sharks were down one goal and came back, I would feel fine about it and say that the Knights have a beef. They gave up four.
Sure.
You gave up four goals on a five-minute power play. I'm reminded of Steve Bernier, getting a major penalty in the first 3 minutes of a clinching game for the Kings. They score three goals, and the game's over from there. And, you know, the Devils can blame Bernier for being a goat for taking a bad penalty. Not the goat kind, but the how he used to say goat. You know, the guy you blame. And, you know, you could just had your penalty kill work. I'm not one to usually say don't blame officiating because it can definitely play a big role in what happens. You know, you could say to the Saints, hey, win it in overtime. You had the ball instead of blaming the officials. But, I mean, four goals on 1 5-minute power play is crazy.
I've never seen it. I don't recall ever seeing anything more than three goals on a major. It's funny. I was looking up the Bernier story. That was in the opening period. There still were two-plus periods left in the hockey game.
I think it was like 5 minutes into the game,
yes,
maybe?
There was still a lot of this. At least you could say this thing happened with 11 minutes to go, just under 11 minutes to go in the third period.
Yeah, you had a lead. All you had to do was kill a three-goal lead for five minutes of a power play, and you gave up four goals.
And they give up the first goal like 6 seconds in. They give up the second goal before the first minute expires, and then they give up two in the back end. But, yeah, look, I think for me, first off, let's not screw around with replay and add coaches' challenges and overreact to this. It was a missed call. Well, I couldn't even tell you if it was a missed call. If they're saying it's the result of Pavelski falling to the ice and banging his head, not where the cross-check was, which is what they're saying according to the pool report. That's its own discussion. Yeah, I saw the clip and I did think, four? How'd you give up four? Like, what, did you become unglued? You gave up a couple of goals in the first minute, but you still had the lead, too, by the way. You might have been shell-shocked when it's 3-2 and there's still 4 minutes left on the power play. Yeah, we've talked about this with the Bills. I mean, they've been screwed over the years. Everybody gets screwed with bad calls. But, you know, you still have a chance to win the game, and you're still leading by three. Yeah, I know you're down a man for 5 minutes, but you're still leading by three goals, and there's 10 minutes to go. Moneypuck.com said the Sharks' percentage chance of winning at the time the penalty was called was 1.19%. You still had a really good chance to close the game out, and you didn't. So at the end of the day, you know, kill the penalty. You're right. I agree with you. I'm not going to blame it on the officials, but it is another instance of the NHL and whether, you know, what are you doing? I mean, the guy got cross-checked in the chest. It's a minor penalty. It's 2 minutes. Stastny, he collides with Stastny. Stastny shoves him. He goes down on the ice. He hits his head. I just can't call that a five-minute penalty. He didn't cross-check him in the face and knock him down directly.
But he thought he did. So this is an example of the official.
The referee apparently thought he did.
Right, and replay is put in where we can see something that the official missed in real time. It's not about he didn't know the rule. It's he thought there was a cross-check to the face. And the way that he fell down, I'm trying to see which – they're showing the replay right now, which official called that. The official that calls it is not in the screen.
The trail guy behind?
Yeah, it's the guy outside the zone. It looks like he cross-checks him across the chest. Yeah, and then he's thrown to the ice.
Yeah.
Hey.
And he's crumpled. I mean, he's down on the ice, like, crumpled up, out cold, whatever. So it's a bad look. So I'm sure the referees figured he was cross-checked in the face, got knocked down the ice, knocked out, and we got to call a major penalty here. That's why I guarantee the league is coming to some kind of review here where the referees could have walked over to a monitor last night, looked at it. Whatever. Hey, by the way, Vegas, now you're officially in the NHL. Your fans, welcome. You're not really an official fan in a league until you get screwed by a call in a big game.
Until you get screwed and until you blow a series that you were definitely better in.
Yeah.
That's another part of it.
I forgot they're up 3-1.
3-1.
I thought it was 3-2.
They're up 3-1 and had 58 shots on Martin Jones in game six.
Yeah, right. And still had a 3-0 lead with 10-plus minutes to go, even though you were going to be down a man for five minutes.
And then scored to force overtime.
Yeah.
And then lost in overtime.
Yeah.
That's a tough one for you, Vegas.
Well, they were in the cup final in year one. They're due. I think it's got a tip. You've got a whole bunch of more painful losses to get over being in the cup final in year one.
Sure. Sure. And, you know, one of the things I think about in this spot is Nashville. 2 years ago, Nashville. Last year, Vegas. When you get there and lose, you tend to do the, we'll be back. This is just the start of something.
Yeah.
And maybe you don't ever get back. Not to say that Vegas will never get back to the Stanley Cup final. But, you know, I their entire existence, they'd always been good and overachieved. And this time, they are the lower seed in the series. But, man, they should have won that. They should have won that series. That's tough. Hey, how about the other series? We haven't talked about that one yet.
Yeah.
We got to spend some time on that one.
Well,
I was having an absolute blast.
Were you?
Retweeting and watching everyone in Toronto fire Mike Babcock.
Oh, I would have, you know, if I should have stayed up just to listen to a post game show in Toronto last night.
I tried to. I couldn't get a Toronto stream going on my phone, but I was trying to listen. And what I was listening to was coverage of the Raptors. So
yeah, that's right. They were playing it
right,
last night.
So
yeah,
I couldn't find it.
Yeah.
But fire Babcock, trade Nylander.
Gardner's got to be a goner, right? They must have been angry with
Gardner. Gardner not worth the money. Trade Blame Kadri. Don't forget about that.
That's right. He missed five games.
Blame Kadri. He missed two series in a row that won seven games, and you probably needed him.
Yeah.
Tavares, I think, got blamed a little bit.
Cool. They didn't blame Marner at all?
Marner, sure.
He went cold at the end of the series.
Marner was a problem. Matthews escapes blame because he scored a bunch of goals.
He did skip five goals.
But I think Marner might catch a little bit of heat. Oh, you won $11 million, Mr. Marner?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe time for a change of scenery for him. You know, you're going to want to get away from that losing culture.
I already
saw.
He's
just losing the first round every year.
There's a piece up at Sportsnet's website this morning about Babcock, and there'll be questions about him and some of his player usage and why did he keep playing Gardner and he didn't use Marleau enough on the power play and the whole bunch of different stuff about Babcock. So, hey, good. Bring it on. You know, I mean, I even saw. I was watching. I DVR'd NHL Tonight to watch back the highlights. Their discussion after the Boston-Toronto highlights was how Toronto lacks grit. They lack sandpaper. That they need more toughness. They need more guys like the fourth line of the Bruins who will play, bring you energy, play hard, and score some goals. So apparently Toronto has too much skill.
Okay, wrist aligning for Nylander.
Okay.
Who says no?
Too much skill. It's a bad thing in the playoffs.
Too much skill.
Too much skill. They need more sandpaper in Toronto.
Wow. Hey, the playoffs are a crapshoot, you know? You get a hot goalie in one game, you get a... I mean, what happened in the Toronto series? The Boston power play beat them up.
Yeah. Well, I think it was 7 for 16 going into the game last night. I didn't see what the final totals were last night. And that was a huge part of the Bruins' offense. And, I mean, Rask played well last night. But you know what? Also, Toronto, the same thing people talked about all season long. Toronto isn't the best defensive team in the world. They score a ton of goals, but they give up a lot of goals, and they give up a lot of chances. And I think that was one of the things that hurt them. You know, when all's said and done, yeah, you had a chance to close out the series at home in Game 6. Maybe they were a little tight. Maybe they're a little nervous. And then they missed out on their opportunity there, and then they go in and lose Game 7 in Boston. If I were Toronto, I would tell them, if I could step aside from my, you know, disdain for the Maple Leafs, I would tell them, don't overreact. You know, don't look for someone to put in the volcano and overreact. I mean, you want to make your defense better? Sure. If you want to move on from Gardner, okay. Kadri, I think, is a legitimate discussion from the standpoint of he's a good player. But from the standpoint of, you know, these suspensions, getting in trouble with the league, getting suspended, multiple time offender in the last, 4 or 5 years, including two playoff series. I think that's a really legitimate discussion about whether they keep Nazem Kadri, who's under contract, or move on from him because they just don't want to deal with his antics anymore. But, there's no need to overreact. You're one of the best teams in the league. You know, find a defenseman. You got Muzzin, which was a nice pickup for them.
Mm-hmm.
Find another defenseman. Anderson played well this year. Maybe they overused him. There was some talk that he ended up playing 65, 70 games. Maybe dial him back a little bit in the regular season. Rask played 45 games this year. So maybe dial down Anderson a little bit.
Maybe. I mean, Anderson is one of the reasons they were in the position they are. He carried them to the first part of the season.
Yeah. And look, the first goal last night was a bad goal, but he's played really well for the Leafs this year on a team, again, that is not that good defensively.
I was serious about Risto for Nylander. Who wants it? Are they not going to make it because it's in the division? Do they want Ristolainen?
Yeah.
With Bogosian out for 6 months, that means he's not getting traded. So Ristolainen's got to happen at some point, just because if the Sabres don't do that, what do they do that could possibly constitute roster surgery?
Right.
So we'll see. But I'm serious about that. I'd take Nylander in a heartbeat. Apparently, There are some Toronto fans about William Nylander that believe he is untradeable because of his contract.
No one would. Numbers were.
I ran into somebody last night on Twitter, in tweeting about the game, going back and forth, that said about Nylander what that one caller said about Eichel, who would want him at that price. Holy cow! Almost every team in the league.
6 years, 6.9.
Yeah.
If you're banking 80 points.
How old is he?
23.
And he had a down year. Absolutely, you want William Nylander for that price. So I'll say yes. Do they want Risto? That's a deal I would do. I don't even know what the difference has to be made up. William Nylander is a very good young winger. And if they blame him, he had a good series too. But he did the turnover right before the empty net goal, which hopefully they blame him for that and trade him.
Well, you know, you talk about, right, a down year. The guy missed training camp. When did he show up? You know, he's out because of the contract situation. He missed his entire training camp in preseason,
yep.
I think, right?
And the first 3 or 2 months of the season as well, yeah.
He's 20. He will turn 23 on May 1st.
A 22-year-old. Absolutely worth it.
Yeah, and
blame
skill set
him.
And
blame,
speed.
Blame him, Toronto.
You know?
It's definitely his fault.
Skill and speed. Yeah, I mean, look, his first two full years, he ends up playing 54 games this year. Comes in late because of the contract. His first two full years, I'm sorry, I said 80. It's 60 points. 22 goals, 61. 20 goals, 61. At ages 20 and 21.
Yeah.
Great. And I mean, he's on a talented offensive hockey team, but no, I like his skill set. I like his ability. He's right now the more advanced of the Nylander boys, right. I should say.
Not as good as Eichel, better than Reinhardt,
yeah.
Fast, scores.
Yeah, it was better than Reinhardt, sure.
Definitely.
I mean, Reinhardt this year was better, obviously, but his first 2 years he was more productive than Reinhardt.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a guy who adds speed to your lineup, so I would be all in for that.
One of the many targets.
And, you know, I think you tweeted this out. There was a discussion, I guess, on Twitter about whether the Sabres can't trade Ristolainen now because of Bogosian's injury and the dearth of right-handed shooting defensemen. You can still trade him. That's fine. You can move on. And you know what? It's not like maybe there's another move for a defenseman that Botchel makes in the offseason. And there is another guy he brings in back there.
If they don't trade Ristolainen, how could anyone find roster surgery? If Bogosian and Ristolainen are both back, what's roster surgery?
Yeah, unless roster surgery is
Reinhardt. It's the only other answer.
Yeah. The only thing I was going to say is they just move guys off that are just – people are going to go yawn. I mean, it's the Larsons, the Gergensons, the Scandellas.
I'm holding them to surgery.
Yeah.
That's not surgery.
No.
That's
subtraction.
Outpatient procedure.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. Right.
You're in and out.
You're in, you're out. Yeah.
You don't even need an anesthetic for that.
I guess these surgery.
A little local anesthetic. We're going to take off Gergensons and Larson. Oh, okay. I don't even need the anesthetic. Go ahead and, you know.
Yeah, it would have to be Reinhardt. No one's going to trade for Postal's contract. Sherry's only got, I think, 1 year left. Not sure they would trade him. Skinner's a UFA. I don't think they would trade Mittelstadt, so I suppose Reinhardt or Ristolainen would be the two biggest names to go. In addition to if you're moving on from the Larsons and the Gergensons and the Sobotkas and the Scandellas and all those guys. But that's not surgery. That's subtraction off your roster.
Yeah.
That's, you hope, addition by subtraction off your roster.
And do you want to hire Babcock if he gets fired?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, why not? I think he's a really good coach. I know he hasn't got the stat on him now is he hasn't gotten past the first round since Nick Lidstrom played his last season.
In his last five series, I think.
Is it five?
The last five times he's coached a team in the first round that has had a lead in the series, five in a row they've lost
really?
That series. Yeah. Wow. So it's not just losing series. It's losing series where you had the lead.
Mm-hmm.
One thing about Babcock, maybe he's not so great. There was a lot of talk about Babcock last night in his usage.
Right.
Auston Matthews played 18 minutes.
He's got to play over 20, obviously.
You trailed the entire game, and Auston Matthews played 18 minutes. You're rolling through the third period, and he had a quote that was it was very Housley-esque, and not that these two own this, but he was asked in postgame something along the lines of why Marleau went out there with 6 minutes to go, or you know, how come it's not – endlessly your top two lines, and his answer was that they wanted to give Marleau a look, or Marleau, it was his
turn,
kind of. Now Marleau, by the way, on the Leafs' entire roster of forwards, was the second lowest expected goals of anyone on their roster. It was Freddie Gaultier and then Marleau.
Wow.
And he's tossing Marleau out there for significant minutes in the third period, so player usage from the Leafs last night, he was getting lambasted by the hockey world. One thing that I find I noted this last night on Twitter, too, is that if you follow a game on Twitter, you get so much more information than you do in the broadcast. Post-game show, NBC Sports Network, what do they say? A couple of bad turnovers for the Leafs.
Yeah.
What is Twitter saying? Mike Babcock is in over his head. He doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to get his best players on the ice, and he consistently didn't get his best players on the ice. He didn't recognize that Nylander was having a better series than Marner. And along the way, you know, you pay for that kind of stuff. How do you lose a series? Sure, they lost by four, but you lose by one or two goals in a series where you led 3-2.
Right, in a close enough series, decisions like that can make or break you when you add them up. Marlowe was one thing. I know it was maybe Luke Fox, who I read from Sportsnet, brought up the point that maybe at times Babcock may have been too loyal to a guy like Patrick Marlowe. So I think that was definitely one of the things in terms of the player usage decisions they brought up with him.
I was thinking about that. Find a coach that doesn't know how long a guy's been playing for. That's your next coach. He has the inability to know if this person is a veteran or a young player.
Well,
best player.
This is your Housley discussion about sticking with veteran defensemen.
This is Housley when we asked him if he's less likely to sit a veteran. He wouldn't answer the question.
Right. Well, the answer is
he's less likely
to sit a veteran.
Don't be afraid of your youth.
Right.
Find me a coach that doesn't even know how old these guys are.
You'd be more likely to sit a guy like Pilot and play a guy like Scandella to play him through whatever issues he might be having. So listen, there's, of course, NFL draft stuff to get to this morning. With the draft coming up tomorrow, Sal's got a new mock draft out, Mock 3 from him, and you can check that out right now at WGR550.com. And Sal will join us this morning at 7:30. But Leafs Bruins, we can talk about that. And perhaps you were up for the Vegas San Jose and the penalty and the discussion there. We can discuss that. Hockey fans, whatever. Phone lines are open. Either way, grab a line, share an opinion. 803-0550 to join us or 888-550-2550 on WGR.
Sharks comeback. Who will be the overtime hero?
Thornton on the boards against Theodore. Stone had the puck but gave it back to Erik Karlsson. Karlsson comes in. Here's Barkley Goodrow.
Barkley Goodrow is the hero for the Sharks in overtime in Game 7.
And the Sharks.
San Jose survives. Funny thing, Howard, I've got a text group, a couple buddies and I. Sharks fans, you know? Temporary Sharks fans.
Financially
and
invested Sharks fans?
I woke up to a text from one member of the group that said, well, it was a fun year.
Oh, he went to bed?
We all went to bed.
Somewhere.
Independently.
3-0, whatever.
Woke up, there's always next year. Oh, geez. Then I started scrolling Twitter and I see stories about the Sharks. I'm thinking, maybe he didn't stay up for the whole game. Sure enough, he didn't.
Uh-oh.
So we're alive.
Yeah.
The Sharks group lives on.
So you said you did or you didn't stay up for the whole
game? I did not.
So I
went to bed.
So you wake up thinking you're...
They're out.
But now all of a sudden, you're financially alive.
It's
got to be a great feeling.
I submitted the proposal that if they win the cup, we take a trip out to San Jose and all wear Martin Jones jerseys. To celebrate.
Because you're such a big fan.
Yes, he's a great friend.
You've been supportive of him all season.
A very good friend to us. So San Jose will play Colorado. In the second round of the Stanley Cup playoffs, San Jose will play the 17th best team in the NHL.
Yay!
Here are your remaining seeds. Now tonight, Carolina and Washington have to they have to settle who's going to win. So Carolina is 11 and Washington is 4.
Yeah.
But let's say Carolina wins, okay? If Carolina wins, there will only be 3 of the top 10 teams in the NHL left. Boston, 3. Washington, 4. San Jose, 6. And that's it. You have Carolina, 11. St. Louis, 12. Columbus, 13. Dallas, 15.
Wow.
Colorado, 17.
It's a great year to win the cup.
It is a year where, what would you say?
The big stumbling blocks are going
this
down.
This is the year of parity.
Yeah.
Usually we have the Penguins push on, the Blackhawks, the Kings. I mean, I guess the Bruins are still in that class to some degree. They're always kind of good. And Washington as well. But I was thinking about what makes it different right now, and it might be that back in the Crosby dominant era and the Taves dominant era, you had teams that didn't have speedy fourth lines. They still kind of thought it was about being tough. And right now, the teams that roll are doing much better. Now, that said, Vegas is that too when they lose.
Well, so. I mean, Boston's fourth line was big last night. I mean, they're not just grinders. Those guys came out and made some nice plays last night and scored some goals for them. They got the they were a big contribution in the win over the
tertiary and secondary scoring. So San Jose wins, Boston wins. And that San Jose-Colorado series is going to be fun.
So the Bruins win 5-1. The Leafs lose Game 7 in Boston for the third time in 7 years.
Hate to see it.
You're going to be okay? You're going to make it through this one?
Yeah.
You need a box of tissues for
Boston
today?
Or the Islanders? Who are you rooting for?
Can I go with Armageddon? Or no, you still don't want the world to
blow
up?
You hate the Islanders.
If it's Boston, well, first off, I need Columbus to win.
Right. Boston-Columbus. That's the
matchup. No question. Columbus is the team in the East now.
Okay.
If it's Boston and the Islanders, I might not watch the series. I would probably have to root for the Bruins. Yeah.
Carolina-Columbus?
Columbus.
Okay. We'll see. Those aren't the matchups. Those could are potential
next-round
matchups.
Carolina has their one cup. They're good. They don't need to win another cup ever.
Yeah. I mean, it'd be nice to see them get a real one.
No.
Zach Bogosian.
No, a real one? You just told me how things are falling this year. All the top teams are going out.
Yeah.
Now all they need is to play teams that have goalie injuries.
Yeah, right. Zach Bogosian hip surgery.
Bobrovsky's going to get hurt in practice. No, when it was Carolina would play the Leonard's going belly up in practice one day.
5-6 months for Zach Bogosian. Amherst Toronto tonight. Amherst trail that series 2-0. NBA. There's one series that's still going on, and that is the Nuggets and Spurs.
Yep.
Denver's up 3-2, and those are your sports headlines. Frank Clark traded for a 2019 first and a 2020 second round pick to the Chiefs.
The shot of the night last night for the NBA, if you haven't seen it, go look at the Damian Lillard game-winning three-point field goal to knock Oklahoma City out of the playoffs. Great shot. It was like they're setting it at 37 feet away. You can see, like, he's near the logo at center court when he launches this shot as time is running out. Headlines brought to you by the Air National Guard. Get military training, serve close to home, and protect others all around the world. It's time to take off. Find out more at goang.com/now or call 1-800-TO-GO-ANG. We are, we're talking playoffs, Stanley Cup playoffs, and, of course, NFL draft. 803-0550 to grab a line this morning, 888-550-2550. We got a lot of stuff coming up with Draft Sal at 7:30. Josh Reed from Channel 4 is going to give us his thoughts on what the Bills should be doing at 8:30. And Rick Saratella from NFL Draft Bible, I believe it is. I will double check that. He's going to give us more of a national slant coming up at 9 since we are getting ready for the big event tomorrow night. And I put up a column about why they should draft TJ Hockenson. You can read that at WGR550.com.
You're all in on Hock. You have been for a couple weeks.
Yeah, why not?
You landed on Hock and you've stayed there.
You know what? Like I said, honestly, I picked him because he's the best. He's the best all-around tight end, right? From what everybody's saying. If it's Fant, great. I want someone to catch footballs. I hadn't thought as much about a wide receiver because I think there's even less of a chance of a wide receiver than a tight end at 9 for the Bills. So if that's the case, who's the best tight end? It's Hockenson. So that's why I would like to see them take him. More likely, you know, there are other good tight ends in the draft. The guy from Alabama is supposed to be a second rounder, maybe a late first rounder, Irv Smith. The guy they brought in for one of their pre-draft visits, Jay Sternberger, is a good all-around tight end. He'd be a good option. I would say more than likely the Bills don't take the tight end at 1 and figure there's enough guys they can grab in the second round or third round at tight end and still go with the pass rusher. It is a very deep draft in terms of tight end. So if they don't grab a guy there, I still expect them to take a tight end somewhere, and there are good guys that will still be on the board for them.
There was a stat yesterday. Mark Gaughan tweeted out that the Bills have not had a tight end top 10 in catches in 18 years.
I had the note. Was it Metzelaars maybe or Reimersma? Oh, Reimersma. I think it was Reimersma, maybe 2001. I'd have to look it up. I looked up the Bills' all-time leading receiver in tight ends in catches is Pete Metzelaars with 300. in 156 games. I mean, you know, there's the tight end production here has been woefully inadequate.
I mean, the same could be said of receiver.
Yeah, but at least in that stretch, you had some 1,000-yard receivers here. You had Moulds, you had Lee Evans, you had productive guys. The tight end position has produced nothing.
Well, I mean, nothing. Yeah, right. Yeah.
And, right, you know, to not have a guy in the top 10 is for that long a period is nuts. You know, it'd be nice if this team could get a tight end. Can you get a tight end to get you 50, 60 catches at least? You know, that's 3 or 4 catches a game on the average, which I don't think is a lot to ask for. So that's part of the whole thing about Hockenson. I would finally like to see the Bills find someone at that position who can be a threat in the passing game. And this kid is good in the passing game. Like Brandon Bean, you know, he talked about the tight end evaluation. It's a 3-part player: pass catcher, pass protector, run blocker. And this guy's good in all three areas. So it's not like you're taking the 9th pick on a tight end, which, right, teams don't normally do, and he's one-dimensional. He'll be in your passing game. He's a red zone weapon guy. He can be a weapon over the middle. He's a big target, obviously. But he's developed into such a good blocker that he can be an extra pass protector if you want to keep him in. He lined up in line with Iowa. And he can help in your run blocking, which is something the Bills need. You know, they've got to improve their run game next season. So I just thought he hits a whole bunch of different boxes. And, you know, I don't want to hear about the whole, but it's too high. Draft down a few, go down a few slots and then trade Hockenson. Anyway, that's my guy. What else is going on? What else you want to talk about today?
Golf season starts tomorrow. The town courses have announced their opening tomorrow.
Oh, is it official? Okay.
Uh-huh. Which I think is about a week early. That's good news. Even though it's going to be about 50.
I don't get my clubs out until a week before the GR tournament, so you let me know how things are going.
Right. Tomorrow will be 65 degrees. Good day to open up the golf courses.
Good. It'll be nice. We're due for the warm weather to be able to get outside again. I got to get reacquainted with the neighbors again. It's been weird. I was watching the weather last. It feels like every day has been 40 and rainy. That has not been the case. But the weather's just been, it's been a lousy spring. It just feels like it's been wet every day, and you have the rare day where you're outside and it's 60 or 70 degrees. So I absolutely need more warm weather so I can get outside a little bit more.
Well, I'm happy for the I keep telling you I'm happy for the draft to be done because I don't like this season of the draft. It's like House of Cards season 5. Season it was that was terrible. I just don't like this season. I'm tired of the Cardinals. I'm so tired of the Cardinals. Cliff Kingsbury says, we don't know what we're going to do with our number one pick. Okay, great.
Yeah, and the whole Josh Rosen's in the building
it's
working
just,
out.
Right, he's here. He's just like any other player here right now. Oh, my God. It's so terrible.
Well,
just make a decision so the rest of us can go on with our lives. It feels like the Cardinals, who never had the spotlight, this is the really cranky me, have found it, and they're dancing in the spotlight, and they don't want to move. Look at us. We're the Oh, my God. I think it's a terrible season.
I think the annoying part of the draft is actually where you get to the point where the teams make the GMs and coaches available. And then you see the ridiculous comments.
Don't say anything.
I don't even remember which team it was. It really doesn't matter. But yesterday, one of the headlines was such and such GM doesn't rule anything out. Great. So basically the GM said, we could stay at our pick and use it. We could trade down. We could trade up. I won't rule anything out. That was the news out of the press conference from this. So-and-so isn't ruling anything out. Good for him. I mean, I'm just so glad to hear that. You know, the guys typically say nothing, and it's people are trying to read into what they're saying, and did they tip their hand at who they're going to pick and when they're going to pick, and it's just exasperating because these guys all know your main job at a pre-draft press conference is to say absolutely nothing. And then leave the media to try and make stories out of it and try and interpret what they're saying. So yeah, I get to this point. I've been good with the draft buildup. When you get to this point, you get this close to the draft and you're just, you know, you're tired of the smoke screens and you're tired of all the stuff that's being out there and the different stories that are floating around. Hey, this draft report says the Jets love this guy. This draft report says the Jets love that guy. You just want to get to the draft already. This is the week that's toughest for me. I can handle all the hype and the lead up. It's this week and getting this close when you're just like, okay, everybody's had 75 mock drafts. Let's just call this thing and start doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to, again, let's just see what the Bills are going to do to complete their offseason, you know, to continue building this roster.
I'd be excited if I were a Seahawk fan, right? You all of a sudden have another pick. Hey, you're in business. Maybe you want to make moves now with 2 first-round picks. So that's kind of fun.
Hey, look, Oakland's got 3 first-round picks. I'd love to, you know, if the Raiders fans are probably wondering what they're going to do.
Giants have 2.
Yep.
If you have 2 picks, it could be a very – the Giants especially, they're very interesting. Dave Gettleman, does he go another season without getting a top-flight quarterback?
He can't, right? I don't know where, but at one – he's got to take somebody in this draft.
You'd think.
Maybe not 6. Hopefully 17. If not there, I don't know where. But he's got to take somebody. You can't just keep putting off the decision and waiting and expect Eli Manning to keep playing and not have somebody in-house developing. It just doesn't make any sense. 803-0550 to join us. The draft is Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. We'll have coverage all 3 days on WGR. So Thursday, 8 o'clock, our coverage begins. It'll be anchored by John Murphy and Steve Tasker. And then on Friday, Friday is rounds 2 and 3. And our coverage will begin at 7 o'clock, and it's Nate Geary and Joe DiBiase. Those guys are back Saturday for the final day of the draft, which is rounds 4 through 7. And on Saturday morning, they'll be on the air at 11. Through the whole draft, Sal will be on hand from the stadium as well. He'll be involved in all of the draft coverage. So that's NFL draft coverage on WGR. And it is presented by Fiegel & Carr, your border attorneys, and brought to you by Lockport Outdoor Store, high-impact gear for hardworking men and women, and by New York's only outlet liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. Hey, before we go to break, we got another pair of tickets to give away to see the big softball game, the Micah Hyde Charity Softball Game, speaking of the football team. That'll be going on at Salem Field downtown. It's set for Sunday, June 2nd, and you can win a pair of tickets right now, actually a 4-pack of general admission tickets by calling 644-9878. Minimum value of the prize, $40. General contest rules apply. We'll take call number 5, again, 644-9878 for the tickets to the Micah Hyde Charity Softball Game. If you don't win tickets and you'd like to go, again, it's Sunday, June 2nd. Tickets are on sale right now at Bisons.com.
I thought we played real good till 3-1. And then at 3-1, I didn't think we had anything after that. But I thought we played real good and carried lots of the play and executed and played the way we wanted to play. So it's disappointing, though. I thought our series this year compared to last year, we were a way better hockey club. In the end, we weren't rewarded.
Can't fault the effort. Mike Babcock in postgame. Leafs lose, which...
That's a shame.
It's great. I saw... Let me know if you agree with this. Jane. I follow Jane on Twitter. Lazy Jane. She wrote about who... In a game like last night in Leafs-Bruins, you've got a hate game, right?
Mm-hmm.
She tweeted, I was once counseled on the idea of maximum fan base disappointment.
This is when you don't like either team?
Yes.
Okay.
How do you choose? You figure out a hate game?
Yeah.
Maximum fan base disappointment.
Absolutely.
And that is a very clear way to find your way to, I'll root for the Bruins. Because if the Bruins lose, what will they do? Here, if the Bruins lose, every fan in that building says, eh, whatever, still got the Pats.
Right.
Leafs lose.
Well, the Raptors are
whatever.
Well,
they don't have anything.
It's not. No. It's,
so they are more easy. Disappointed. So in a situation where you've got to decide who to root for or who to root against because you hate them both, pick the fan base that's going to be the most disappointed and then root for them to lose.
Well, it's funny. That's why I think you asked me earlier this hour about if Boston were to play the Islanders in the Eastern Conference Final. I don't like either team. So the way I look at it and the way I this is why I tweeted out when I finally figured out it took me 7 games to phrase it. It wasn't. I'm glad Boston won. It wasn't I'm rooting for Boston to win. It was, I look at it as, I'm rooting for Toronto to lose. It's semantics. It's crazy. But, yeah.
But I'm taking this all the way
but to... When you look at which team, like I would envision, okay, Boston's playing the Islanders. I don't like either team. The series ends. Somebody's celebrating. How am I feeling? Is it worse with this team or is it worse with that team?
But you're doing it backwards.
And I go in the opposite
direction. You don't think about who's celebrating. You think about who's upset.
Yeah.
Who will be more upset?
But I think of how upset I'm going to be based on who's celebrating.
Well, then that's not a tie then. You can just pick a game, Boston Islanders. But in a game like Boston-Toronto, where you hate them both, because I guess you do hate the
Islanders.
I don't
like the Islanders.
That's true.
Yeah, I don't like them. Yeah.
Well.
It's the same thing.
Maximum fan base disappointment. I like it. I think it's unassailable. That's how I was going. Boston can win the Stanley Cup and they won't even care. Right.
It's just another parade.
Right. If they lose in the Cup Final, oh, whatever, we got the Pats.
What if they get to the point where they just stop having parades because there's too many of them? Hey, you know what? Let's not tie up the streets again and have people leave
they've
work.
They've got multiple parades booked. Yeah. Like, oh, we're June 17th's not going to work, guys.
Nope,
we got
that's
another
the Celtics parade.
Yeah, we got another parade that day.
Right.
Maybe they get a 2-for-1. Celtics and Bruins parades.
Yeah, that'd be great.
And save money on, you know, overtime pay for security and stuff. Yeah,
the poor kid's going to need a bigger piece of oak tag for his sign.
Texter writes in that 590 and Brian Burke are saying Nylander's not the right player for their team. If a trade happens, be after July 1st. Sounds great. Trade him.
You know, I think Marner's not worth what they're going to pay him myself.
I do, too. His, you know, smaller guys can't perform in the playoffs. Just
right.
Look at Johnny Gaudreau, you know, and Marner. Victor Arvidsson, maybe? I don't know if he falls in that category.
I'm trying to
much.
Think if Marner, what I just wanted to look at his game log. I know he went through games 5 and 6 without a shot. He got 5 shots on goal last night. Marner had 0 points the last 3 games of the series. Bum. Don't sign him.
Not worth the money, Toronto.
He had 2 goals and 4 assists in the first 4 games, and then zippo the last 3, and was held shotless in games 5 and 6. I think you should either not match an offer sheet or just go ahead and trade his rights.
They're not going to make a move on Babcock, right? Do we get any sort of...
I mean, he's only...
He's going to return next year announcement today?
The only thing I would say is, and I don't know this, is if for some reason, I mean, if Kyle Dubas doesn't get along with Mike Babcock, like there is an internal issue. I wouldn't think 4 years into what, an 8-year contract he signed, right? 4 years into an 8-year contract, I wouldn't think they would fire him and say he's the reason why we're not having playoff success. Like I said, unless there's a personality issue, or if the GM legitimately feels his player usage isn't right. If they think there's a legitimate problem with how Babcock was using players or not using other players, then that's an area where the GM could go to management and say he's just not using the roster the right way.
One thing about last night's
game. And they certainly have a guy, I would think. If you're going to fire Babcock, the question is, okay, what are you doing to replace him? They have a guy I would think they love in the minors, in Sheldon Keefe. Right.
One thing about last night's game, the Sharks game that I watched, if you were up watching that, Carlson looks to be getting healthier. He's been hurt a lot of the year, right? And you haven't known how healthy he's going to be. I mean, on that 5-minute power play where they get 4 goals, he factors in big time.
Mm-hmm.
And you can watch Carlson and you see Dahlin. You see the inspiration for Rasmus Dahlin. It's like listening to a band now and being able to hear that they are influenced by whoever.
Yeah.
Bruce Springsteen, it doesn't matter who they're influenced by. The Beatles, you can tell, oh, yeah, these guys definitely used to listen to so-and-so. Carlson looks like the building block. He looks like the inspiration for Rasmus Dahlin because Dahlin does those sort of things. And if he ends up, you know, following the career arc that he should, I fully expect him to be one of the 3 to 5 best defensemen in the league. Just watching Carlson and watching Dahlin. Carlson's been the best for a while. He looks just like him out there.
I'd have to find the story, but it was interesting, Jeremy. In one of the stories I was reading about Rickard Granberg, it was a Q&A or something that somebody had done with Granberg a year or two ago. They brought up the Swedish approach to defensemen. And again, I don't have it in front of me, so I'm trying to recall the details. But the Ice Hockey Federation, basically the people who run hockey in Sweden like 10 or 15 years ago, looked at it and thought, we've got to change what we're doing with defense and we've got to develop our guys differently. And they realized, you know, we can – and look at the defensemen have come out. I mean, that was at the time Lidstrom was – I mean, Hedman comes out after that. Dahlin comes out after that. Carlson comes out after that. I know I'm forgetting other guys from Sweden. But they made a concerted effort to change their complete mindset as to how they develop defensemen. The role defensemen play on the ice, you know, getting him more involved in offense, let him go up ice. And look at how it's changed their program around nationally, junior teams, world championship teams, and look what it's done in terms of producing first-round defensemen in the NHL.
That article in The Athletic about Granberg, did you think about Ristolainen reading it? Because he says that Swedish defensemen, or the way he coaches them, you are not quite prohibited or forbidden. But
that's right, yes.
You don't ring the puck off the glass.
Yeah.
You always maintain possession. Right. And there are going to be 2 ways to think about that Granberg guy if he gets the job. One is Ristolainen does not fit what he does.
No.
The other is maybe he can turn Ristolainen into – because he has talents and abilities. He just doesn't play the game all that smartly.
Right.
And Granberg – I just thought about Ristolainen, who who consistently is careless with possession and just gives the puck away all the time. Not tape-to-tape turnovers, which stand out sometimes, but just gives the puck, punts it away all the time, and that would not go over well with Granberg.
Sure. No, they want their defensemen to hold the puck.
Hold
they want
puck.
Them to make plays.
Yep.
They talked about how they don't call it if they make mistakes, they don't say it's making mistakes. They talk about giving them chances.
Yeah,
they don't look at it as a failure. They look at it as a like almost like a missed opportunity. We want you to take these
chances. He says they want to create chaos so much so that the other team can't scout against you. Mm-hmm. They don't know what you're going to do out there.
Yeah, and I think they might have taken a little bit of a page from the Russians. I thought they cited what Russian hockey had done a long time ago and how North American hockey at the time was struggling trying to deal with the Russian system and how to combat that. I'm talking, you know, this is going back into the 70s leading up to the Miracle on Ice and the Russian teams that came over here in the 80s. I thought it was a really interesting read and give credit to Sweden for realizing we need to do something differently and it's paid off. It's paid off for them and it's paid off for their guys that are coming into the National Hockey League and having success over here on the North American game. 803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550. We talked some playoffs this hour, but we also, of course, are talking NFL draft with you. And what are some of the questions you have about the Bills going into the draft? Round one is Thursday night. You can call us up and we'll talk draft with you. It is Wednesday, which means it is Hoagie Hump Day. So today, at some point, tweet us. And you'll have a chance to win a gift certificate from Jim's Steakout. All you need to do is tweet at WGR550. And when you do, make sure you use the hashtag Hoagie Hump Day. And that'll put you in the running for a $25 gift certificate to Jim's Steakout.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.